It's three days out. Not your feeling going in, and how many new faces do you think we'll see from Geelong this week?
Yeah, we're positive, and part of the reason for the positivity is the prospect of having at least a few new faces in. We're not in a position where we're going to announce any of them yet, mainly because we haven't made up our mind exactly what the makeup of our team will be, but there's a few younger guys who are well and truly in the frame, and then a few older guys from other clubs that have certainly put a good case forward. So there's a very, very strong likelihood that the team that played our last game last year will be quite different to the team that takes on Collingwood Friday night.
How exciting is that from your perspective, going through, you know, falling into a season?
It's really exciting, and it's not that dissimilar to the place we've been in over the last couple of years as well, maybe even longer than that. We're really optimistic about the future, and some of the changes we've made have been made clearly because we think we can improve via those changes. But yeah, it's been a pretty significant period of transition for us, but it's still exciting that we think with some optimism that if we get it together, we can compete with the good size, and clearly Collingwood are one of those.
You talk about the excitement of it, but just also the necessity of making those changes given sort of your performance, where you've ended up in the last 3 years, you know, the two prelims short, and then last year clearly dropping just that run below where the pace was, you know, just the necessity to make those changes.
But I can't think of a time, at least in my experience at Geelong, even after the 2011 Premiership, where we've come away thinking we've got it all sorted, mm-hmm. we don't need to make any changes, let's just roll out the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I agree with your assessment that we've come up short the last few years and we needed to find ways to improve, but I just don't think that's that different to the position we've been in previously.
What's the one thing you think we'll see different from Geelong this year? Is there one? I mean, it's probably five or six, but the one that we've noticed the most?
I think I'm going to be really careful not to pinpoint one part because it is so multifaceted, and it is there's so much work that's gone into it. And to be really honest, it's difficult to forecast which one of the tweaks we've made will have the biggest impact. And there's the potential that there'll be something that evolves over the early part of the season that we might think has the biggest impact. But to highlight a couple of areas that we've spoken about previously, we have brought some new players into our team that for the most part have changed the look in terms of personnel, at least in our front half of the ground. One of the things that we have struggled with over a period of years is getting some continuity in that group, and we haven't solved that problem yet. The most obvious reason for that lack of continuity was injury, so it's difficult to control that, but the guys that we think will be playing in that part of the ground have had a good preparation, so they've given themselves every chance. And hopefully it's one of the few times that I will go back to last year. If we compare what we're aiming to do this year with what we rolled out last year, we just weren't good enough in the big moments, and we acknowledge that. So the challenge for us is to work as hard as we can and get as many things right as we can to give ourselves the opportunity to be in those moments, because that's the first part. And then we're relishing the opportunity to deliver if we're good enough to put ourselves in that chance.
Pressure in the front half has been spoken about, yeah, by the players when we've spoken and that sort of thing. Is being a focus, can you see that in round one, or does that stuff take time? And have you done enough over the summer, you think, to be where you want to be in that area?
I think the preparation's been good. We haven't put ourselves in a position where we're playing one of the best teams in the competition, one of the Premiership favourites on a Friday night at the MCG. It's almost impossible, or it is impossible, to do that in the pre-season preparation. But the signs are good. So some of the things that we look to improve, we've seen good evidence for in the pre-season training and in a small sample size in the pre-season games. But the biggest test is this week, but it's the biggest test so far. I don't think we'll come away from the game thinking, beautiful, we fixed that part, let's move on to other things. We'll come away with a little bit more evidence that it's going well, or a little bit more evidence that we've still got some work to do.
Chris, you're in two ruckmen during the JLT. I'm not sure whether that was because you could, with bigger squads, or is something you're looking to do? Will we see two ruckmen Friday night?
I think every team's going to have to play two ruckmen in some capacity. Whether they're two genuine ruckmen, and it's an interesting question how you define that within our list. We have chosen to play Mark Blitzarves more as a key defender, but he has been a ruckman in previous years. Very different taking 22 into round one as opposed to 26 through the pre-season games. What we won't do is take one ruckman in that plays 100% game time in the ruck. So the makeup of that second ruckman is a question that every team in the comp is still wrestling with, including probably the best team.
Is Sava Regalese going to be okay, or do you still need to test that out before Friday?
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. Yeah, he's got a dislocated finger. It'll be okay.
Just with Collingwood, the two. It might be a view that's not shared by others, but the two teams on paper at least stack up fairly evenly. But how much of your time, or what teams have spent the most time on looking at Collingwood? Is there one area of their game specifically that you've had to look at more than another area, or?
I don't want to build them up too much, but they're pretty complete now. They've had a long period to develop this list. They have a lot of talent there. Some of the holes that they may have had in terms of their key position players, and include Jamie Elliott in that. I mean, he's not a key position height, but he plays as a small key position player. Have been filled pretty well, even to the point where Ben Reid, in years gone by, is a really crucial player to their structure. He's injured, it doesn't seem to matter too much. With all respect to Ben, clearly he's a good player, but they seem to have some options there, even to the point of playing Darcy Moore as a key defender when he's traditionally been, at least as a youngster, a key forward. Yeah, Howe comes in there, and then the addition of Roughhead as well. At the very least, you look at that and think, well, they're not obvious holes in their makeup. And then they've got very, very good players and very talented players, at least on the measure of draft position across every line. So I know it's a broad answer, but we haven't thought that we should focus in on one area more keenly than others, because if we do that, we'll miss some pretty big ticket items.
Yeah, I've got spoken about playing forward over the pre-season, perhaps spending more time at forward than he had previously. Immediately there's discussion about goals and that sort of thing, but also towards the end of last year there was some criticism over the defensive side of his game. How will you assess his game if he does spend more time at forward? What do you look for from a player like Gary?
Well, it needs to be, his game needs to be assessed differently when he plays a different role, and my view is that Gary's game from the outside has been assessed too much based on numbers. I think to get a statistical analysis of his game this year is going to be really difficult, and that goes for most small forwards. It can be a position where you need to take the most of your opportunities. If you're getting a whole lot of opportunities, then you can put the performances up, but sometimes you can play your role really well, not kick many goals and not get much of the ball. We think he's going to be a dangerous player in the contest for us. We'd like him to get on the scoreboard as much as possible, but more importantly than those things, we want him to work cohesively with the other guys down there, and that's really hard to get a statistical measure on. And I accept that it's hard for people outside to rate his performance, given that some of those statistical numbers aren't going to tell the whole story. So I'm not sure we've said it publicly, but I think we should acknowledge also when we're assessing how Gary's going during the year, he's 35. He's been a fantastic player, but there aren't many 35-year-olds playing better AFL footy than they were at 30, much less 27. It's very unlikely he's going to play every game for us, and he's going to be a little bit more of a role player for us, rather than someone that we build our whole game plan around. And I would contend that was the situation for the most part of last year as well, even though we didn't communicate it for various reasons. So we are still very confident he's got a big part to play for us, but I don't think we should be rating Geelong's chances based on how well Gary can play as an individual.
Is he comfortable with that too? You obviously spoke to him through that in terms of his role as well.
Yeah, I think if I had one criticism of Gary, it would be that he pushes back against me a little bit more. He's very agreeable in terms of these things, and he's very realistic. I think I get the sense he'd like to play for as long as possible. And the only way for him to do that at our club is for him to have really good clarity on his role and really good clarity on how he's going to fit within the longer-term planning of the team. And when I say longer-term, I'm really only talking about this season, but he can, I'm certain, with the attributes that he's got and the way he prepares himself, that he can be a really valuable member of the team. But we don't need Gary Ablett to have a career-best season for us to be a pretty good team this year.
Can you squeeze all of your tour defenders into the one side? Like Henderson, Collins, and Taylor, Blitzlaus, and Stewart is a bit flexible, but I mean, can you fit all of these guys into the one team?
I think it's a challenge. It's not impossible, and it will depend a little bit on the opposition. So if we focus on the opposition at hand that tend not to play too tall, so that increases the challenge. We've been open-minded for a while. Obviously, we've got some preferences and some... we think that there's a likelihood and that we'll go a certain way. But we're still not at the point... Not sure that I would tell you anyway, but we're not at the point now where we've absolutely decided which guys will go in. But it's not dissimilar to the Gary Ablett situation. It'd be unlikely that all the guys you mentioned, I'd throw Jack Henry in there as well, will play every game this year. So we're more of the view that we're saying we've got a group of players that we can use to good effect throughout the course of the year, rather than saying we're going to settle on two or three taller defenders and we're just going to play them no matter what.
Is that a change of philosophy in a sense that you think with a modern game that you can't play every game? It's really hard in that sense.
I've been of that view since I started at Geelong. The reasons for doing it have changed a little bit and evolved. When there have been times throughout the last 7 or 8 years that we have actively sought to get youth into the team because we thought that was really important for the longer term. For a while now, we haven't needed to actively do that. We haven't had to manufacture it. We've been picking pretty much our best team every week, and that just happens to have 10 to 12 really inexperienced players in there. The game has got a little bit harder in my view, and the season is quite relentless, so that's another reason to do what you can to build a really strong squad of 30 plus players that you can use through there. Now, I will acknowledge that some of the teams that have had great success over the last decade have been the really stable ones too. So there's a balance there to be struck. There is a very strong argument that if you can get 23 or 24 guys that play every week, you build great cohesion. You're obviously having a good run with injury, and that increases your chances. The risk is if you do get a few injuries late, then you bring in guys that haven't played much footy, and then the longer-term risk is you're not exposing your youth to the rigours of AFL footy. So that's the balancing act.
Touch on those younger guys, you obviously brought a few in, as you touched on, you brought some new guys into the club as well. You've still got, I guess, quite a few of your better players around 30 or over 30. Do you ever get the sense that, I guess, time is ticking for success? I mean, you've been around the mark for so many years, but in terms of that ultimate success, does that ever happen now, or is it too simple with the way you can get guys in?
Oh, my great coach, Lee Matthews, I think he might have stolen the line from one of his previous coaches, but he said it's always later than you think, and that's our attitude. Now, does that preclude us from having success down the track? I think that would be a little bit disrespectful to the work that's been put in by our list management group and the work that our academy's done in developing players who, let's be honest, haven't been top 10 draft picks. But I'd challenge you to name our best 8 players. Selwood and Dangerfield. Well, Selwood's 30, Dangerfield's not. I'm not sure who are those other guys over 30 in our best 8 or 10 players are. Hawkins. Ablett's in our best 8 players, is he?
Is he? No.
It's an interesting question. I don't sit down and rate them. Maybe we do when we're working out our TPP strategy, Ablett's nowhere near there if we're looking at judging quality on pay scale. He's a pretty good value player.
Just on Joel, if he is going to spend a bit more time on the outside, do you expect Greenwood to focus as heavily on the outside?
Yeah, they've got an interesting discussion to be had at their match committee. One of the problems with having a midfield that's stacked with talent is working out where the, and I use this term respectfully, role players fit in. To get Greenwood in there onto Selwood, they need to move someone to the outside. So that's a nice luxury to say, well, we'll just play Beams or side bottom or Treloar, half forward and push them up. But it is a little bit of a shift to their structure. He's played a little bit back. Joel relishes the chances to play on the good stopping players, and Levi's been one of them for a period of years. But I think it's more their problem than ours.
Just on Selwood, Chris Scott.
I should say, the problem we have, if we choose to play a run with player, is whether we go to Pendlebury or Beams or Treloar or side bottom. There's a few others in there as well. It's not many teams that can have Taylor Adams and Hoskin Elliott, two first round draft picks out of their team and not make much of a dent into their midfield. So we're aware of the challenges.
Just want an update on Scott Selwood after he came off early on Friday night. Had a skin and got a result.
We do have a result. It's another hamstring injury, and it's going to be a mid-term recovery at this point, whatever that means. Very difficult to work out with any great clarity exactly how that's going to play out, but we do know that he won't be back in the short term, so it's really disappointing for us all.
Well, Zach Tui just come up short this week.
Zach won't play. He thinks he could. I guess if you held a gun to my head, I think he could too, but we just don't take those risks at this time of year. He's one of those guys that, again, if we were prepared to take those risks, I think he could get out there and do it. But Zach's someone that we're optimistic can play for a long time for us. He's got that sort of makeup, and he's become an important part of our team. So we're so enthusiastic about performing well on Friday night, but not so enthusiastic that we're going to make stupid decisions.
We saw at West in the past 3-4 hours with Jesse Hayden and with Clint Clanzoe. He might be playing round one. Certain other things off field as well. I won't ask for any specifics, obviously, on that. But how tough is it now, I guess, juggling all of those sort of things when mental health and focus on that has become so prevalent inside footy clubs?
I think the hardest thing is separating the individual circumstances of a player from the general challenges that the whole industry faces, and the whole of society, to be honest, around mental health. I think it's good practice not to be cynical and not to generalise when it comes to these sort of situations. I'm loath to comment, even in terms of the general situation around mental health, because I do think we should acknowledge that everyone's circumstances are unique, and it's very rare that people in the public space are afforded the respect of going through all the individual issues that they're facing. So we can jump to conclusions around whether they're handling it well or not. But the one thing that is really clear, life for some people in our industry is getting harder. So when things are getting harder, the support around them needs to be stronger. And so that's the takeaway for our footy club. Make sure that we're putting as many resources as we can around not just the people that are having trouble, but around everyone, to make sure that there's some sort of prevention as the priority. So Jed Buse is coming along well, albeit slowly, with some groin soreness, but we're really hopeful that he'll be available in the early rounds of the season. So he's back into some significant training now. Nakai Cockatoo, as I've said previously, we are just ultra cautious with. So he's coming back from a PCL injury and some hamstring history that we're really careful of. So the signs are good that he's making progress, but every time he has a little bit of a hiccup, it tends to be magnified with Nakai. So our intention with him is to make sure that he's absolutely cherry ripe, not only to come in and perform well at AFL level, but to put all these injury issues behind him and have a really sustained period of footy. And that probably means, I'm speculating a bit, but it probably means that when he does come back, that he might only play a few weeks at a time before we give him a little bit of a chop out. But the priority with him is to make sure that he has a long career at the Geelong Footy Club, because he's all our players are worth the investment, but he's just someone that short-term mistakes because of short-termism just can't be accepted.
Maybe when we draw on the debutants name by name, can you give us one in Jordan Clark? Is he a lock?
No, I can't say that he's a lock, but be a brave coaching group not to pick him. We're a brave coaching group, aren't we?
So he's a lock.
In all seriousness, the only reason we don't announce it is because there are just other decisions we need to make, and players are pretty good at working through the process of elimination when it comes to selection. So.
How does the Tom Atkins story then, Chris?
If nothing else happens from here, it's been a great story. We can only really speak to the way he's prepared himself over the pre-season. Our VFL program and our academy program that do have a level of autonomy within our program have been pushing him for a long time. And I'll speak for myself. I've always rated Tom, and I've always rated his application and his ferociousness as a player, but he's grown in my estimation over the last 3 or 4 months, there's no question. And I think some of our academy and VFL staff are probably looking at me or listening to that comment and thinking, well, you know, you're not a very good judge, because it's been pretty clear for a while. And that may well be true, but Tom's been an inspiration to us all. And what I will say is, it's not an uncommon story. We're not talking about a unique situation where we've developed players through our VFL and our academy program and then brought them up into our AFL system, and they've proven that they belong on the big stage. He's one of quite a long line now, so as much as anything, his success is a good story for the younger players in our VFL program to look at and aspire to.
Just a couple of other injury updates: Jack Colgersny and Zach Smith.
Yeah, good news with Zach Smith. It was a little concerning when he hurt his knee. He has had some history with that knee, but we're really confident now that was minor, and he's in the frame to play this week. Not at AFL level, obviously. He hasn't had that preparation, but he should play. And Jake Colajasny's fine.